Welcome back to Uprising. I'm Sonali Kohatkar. In late May, Ireland became the first country in the world to legalize gay marriage by voter referendum. Through a historic campaign in the largely Catholic country, Irish voters defied a convention and pollsters to make a huge showing at the ballot box under the banner of Yes Equality. Young and old, urban and rural, Catholics and non-Catholics voted to extend the right of marriage to all. The victory was considered a landslide, with 62% voting in favor of marriage. The referendum amends Ireland's constitution to simply say that marriage is a union between two people, regardless of sex. Joining me now is Michael Lee Murphy. He's an Irish-born, New England-raised, Montreal-schooled reporter and a contributing editor with Ricochet. Welcome to Uprising, Michael.
Thank you so much for having me.
So England, Wales, and Scotland have already legalized marriage. But by legislation, why was Ireland the last to do it? And why did it choose a public vote rather than by legislation?
Well, I think there's a couple of different competing reasons for that. One would be, as far as the reason why Ireland would be the last to approve same-sex marriage, they had in many ways a higher hurdle to overcome, being that it was enshrined in the Constitution that same-sex marriage was banned. And that's the reason why they had to go with a popular referendum rather than legislation, because it required a change in the Constitution. So in many ways, there was a higher hurdle to overcome, but indeed they did, and they're the first country in the world to legalize same-sex marriage by popular referendum.
So then let's talk about how there is a, you know, when this does happen, when there is a popular referendum for an issue. In this case, it was required because that was the only way to do it. But you run the risk, of course, of having a majority vote on the rights of a minority. It could have turned the other way. And I think through the hard work of a lot of organized campaigns, it turned out as a victory for human rights, but it could have turned out the other way. As we've seen in places like California, where Proposition 8 passed and a majority voted to curtail the rights of a minority, a slight majority, I should say.
Well, there's a couple of things to say about that. And one, I think, is that even though people seem to pay a lot of attention to Ireland, it's quite a small country. The Republic, the South, is only about 4.5 million people. So there's definitely not the kind of vast array of money, of interest groups, all weighing in on an issue like you had in California. I mean, I wouldn't presume to be an expert about California, but about Prop 8, but certainly there was much smaller amounts of people voting in Ireland. And I think it's, as you said, there is a risk of putting the rights of a minority up to the vote to a popular vote. But it's a real testament to the organizing done by the Yes campaigners. And indeed, the only people really organized against the vote, for organizing for a no vote, was an outfit called the Iona Institute, which is sort of a, I've heard it called an AstroTurf group, which very close ties to the Catholic Church. And they're their organizing was just not strong. I think there was a sense that the country was changing, and the Yes campaigners really tapped into that.
And in fact, it was the fact that Ireland is such a small country really an advantage to an issue like this, because people talk to one another, people know their neighbors. There's a sense of a smaller community, a smaller group of people. I mean, the entire state of California is vastly larger than the entire country of Ireland.
Absolutely. I mean, It's been said a lot that Ireland is not really a Catholic country, but it's rather a pagan country with a thin veneer of Catholicism over the top of it. Ireland is the village is still an extremely important aspect of Irish life and Irish society. I think the Yes campaigners in Ireland, especially in the rural west of the country, took great lessons from that bit of discredited research that came out of the UC system about door-to-door campaigning and the influence. I mean, I understand that was discredited, but
Can you explain that a little bit more? The door-to-door campaign.
Well, as far as I understand, there was a piece of research that came out of from a I think a UCLA graduate student who said that, the single best way to change people's minds on specifically on the issue of same-sex marriage or equal marriage was to speak face to face with them. And I think it came out that that this student made up some of the research, and it was discredited based on his fabricating some of it. But people in Ireland surrounding this referendum really took it to heart before it was discredited. And so they went door to door quite a bit, especially out in the West. And the thing about the West of Ireland is you really know your neighbors. It's definitely not the kind of there wouldn't be the kind of suburban divisions that there would be in this country. So I think that really, really had a big impact, especially in the West. As you said, it was both urban and rural populations that voted in support of the referendum. So, and I think the door-to-door game really helped that.
So even if you took out the urban areas, in the rural areas by themselves, there mm-hmm. was a majority vote in favor of this referendum. So that's
a lot. In fact, out of 43 voting precincts across the country, one came out against same-sex marriage, and that was by a very slim margin, just over 1,000 votes.
Wow.
Out of some 25,000 cast, I believe. Yes, even if there was a lot of interesting talk comparing the map of this referendum to the map of the divorce referendum in 1995, which passed by a very slim margin, and that was essentially the cities, Dublin, Limerick, Cork, against the rural areas, which voted against legalizing divorce. But it was completely different this time around. Even the rural areas that were traditionally against, that you'd think of as being traditionally Catholic, more Catholic, came out in support of same-sex marriage.
Well, it would be interesting for a U.S. Christians/Catholics to take a lesson from Ireland, that if they do support the idea of marriage, if they are against divorce, one thing to do is to support the right of anybody to marry and divorce. So, Michael, how did people organize, aside from the door-to-door campaigning? I think it's important for us to understand if Ireland struck upon a model that can be applied in other arenas. There were also, I understand, social media campaigns. There were campaigns where people literally flew back home to Ireland to vote. Families worked, you know, to make sure that every member, every relative went out together to vote. Can you tell us a little bit about how it happened on the ground?
As I said before, it was certainly a face-to-face interaction that they based their model off of. In some ways, Ireland is unique in the sense that few countries, certainly in the English-speaking world, have as much been defined by the hierarchy of the Catholic Church as Ireland has been over the last two centuries. And in many ways, this is sort of a roundabout answer, but in many ways, Irish nationalism around the time of independence became linked to Catholicism, so that the way to prove how Irish we were was to prove how Catholic we were. Hmm. That mental architecture has fallen away. Another thing that's unique to Ireland, but I think has parallels in other places around the world, is Ireland recently, in 2010, received a bailout from the IMF, European Union, European Central Bank, Troika, like Greece and Spain. And so for many years, up until quite recently, budgets, national budgets, had to be approved by Brussels, essentially, by the European Union. So Irish sovereignty was removed as part of this bailout program. This vote was an assertion of sovereignty, and it was an assertion of the right of Irish people to govern Irish lives. And I think there is a sense, an increasing sense, across much of the world that they are losing their ability to control their own lives. And I think the Yes campaigners really tapped into that. This is our opportunity to make a very serious decision that governs our own lives. And I think if campaigners around the issue of marriage equality or around other issues, you know, so-called social issues, can tap into that kind of idea. I think there's definitely models to be gained there.
Is there a comparison that can be made between this vote in Ireland and Scotland's independence vote, which narrowly failed?
Well, I think so. And not only between Ireland and Scotland, but also between the election, with the election of Syriza in Greece, with the rise of Podemos in Spain, I think there is an increasing idea across Europe that the economic institutions and the political institutions and the institutions of power are wholly inadequate in addressing the desires and the needs of the people they govern and the people they control. I think it is certainly there's a wave of liberatory politics, which I would class the Scottish referendum as part of. We saw it failed, but I would argue owing to a campaign of fear coming from the right in Scotland. But there's a sense across Europe that the institutions that govern people's lives have failed writ large, and that there is an attempt to wrest back control from these institutions. And I think the Irish referendum is part of that, as well as the Scottish referendum.
I want to
turn
briefly back to the issue of the Catholic Church, and you were mentioning how the Irish are identifying less closely with the Catholic Church than they used to. The Catholic Church, the Vatican in particular, took a very hard line against this vote, despite Pope Francis's somewhat progressive approaches to other issues. The Vatican Secretary of State Cardinal Pietro Parolin said the referendum was, quote, not a defeat for Christian principles, it was a defeat for humanity. And I was just astounded by that statement. I mean, you know, the war in Syria is a defeat for humanity. The Rohingya refugee crisis is a defeat for humanity. But Irish people saying yes to gay marriage, the Vatican sees that as a defeat for humanity. How is that being seen in Ireland?
It's quite an incredible statement, isn't it? I mean, to put it quite bluntly, the Catholic Church doesn't have a leg to stand on in Ireland really anymore, for a number of reasons. In the last 15 years, say, 20 years, the extent to which the Catholic hierarchy within Ireland specifically covered up, supported, sexual abuse, rampant sexual abuse, has become clear in the last 20 years or so, stretching back generations. I think the Catholic Church lost a lot of credibility when a lot of this stuff came out. The other thing about the Catholic Church, specifically in Ireland, is that the Catholic Church has been on the wrong side of a number of social, very important social developments in the country. The Catholic Church in Ireland famously supported and encouraged Irish people to go and fight for the fascists during the Spanish Civil War because of what they saw as concerns about the Catholic churches being burnt in Spain and so on and so forth. So they've been on the wrong side of a lot of issues throughout history. That being said, I was quite shocked by the Vatican Secretary of State with that quote, because Pope Francis has taken such a more, I don't know how to phrase it, liberatory tact on a lot of issues. I forget what his exact quote was, but he said not too long ago, just in the last couple of months, you know, who am I to stand in the way of a gay person who wants to be in communion with God? And that was a fairly big moment. So I was quite shocked by the Secretary of State's comment on that. The other interesting thing about Pope Francis and why I don't rate that one retrograde quote very highly is that he has opened the door in a lot of ways to a reintroduction of liberation theology in larger Catholic teaching, which is of course very a very big part of Catholicism in Latin America. So I don't know. I'm less willing to say that was a big moment for the church. I think the church is actually, you know, the church globally is moving in the right direction on these issues.
So, Michael, I want to turn to how this vote in Ireland may or may not influence the discussion around gay marriage here in the United States. There was one Colorado Republican lawmaker named Gordon Klingenschmidt, a former Navy chaplain, who said this on his TV show about the Irish vote, quote, "There was a time when it was said that St. Patrick drove the snakes out of Ireland, and now I'm concerned that the snakes have returned to Ireland. And when I say snakes, I'm not talking about physical snakes. I'm talking about the demonic spirits inside of some of the people you see parading their sin in pride around the country, rejecting not just the Catholic Church, but rejecting Jesus Christ himself." Wow. Again, you know, wow.
Well, this is the kind of stuff you hear all the time from Republican lawmakers at the state level. But I mean, this is a man who obviously knows nothing about Ireland other than St. Patrick. So I don't know. I mean, I don't think that demonstrates. It certainly demonstrates an amount of an ideology in some quarters of America, as we've seen. But the interesting thing about Ireland and its relation to the U.S., it has quite an interesting relationship because of it, you know, Ireland has always been seen to have sort of a disproportionate level of influence on the politics of the United States. Some historians have called Ireland the 51st state. So I do think, Ireland only has 4.5 million people, but, you know, I don't know what the number is exactly, but tens of millions of people in America would identify themselves as Irish or Irish American. So I think that there's going to be, there's a possibility for people in America who have called themselves, you know, Irish or Irish American, who have been opposed to gay marriage, to say, well, the Irish have done it, actually, the Irish. It's possible to overstate the amount of impact this could have on the United States, but I think that there's that strange ethnic connection.
And also,
Ireland.
Of course, we don't have that option to have a federal vote on one single issue such as this in the United States. The issue of gay marriage remains right now, at least on a federal level, with the Supreme Court. Despite the fact that a majority of states have legalized gay marriage, the Supreme Court is right now considering this issue, a number of cases where it could turn, you know, tomorrow or I believe in this month, issue a ruling. And attitudes have changed here in the United States, but given the Irish vote, attitudes internationally seem to have significantly changed as well. And I'm wondering if, going back to our question about how organizing can happen, I'm wondering what you think people can take away here in the United States, because of course we're trying to influence one group of 12 people to do the right thing rather than convince, you know, our neighbors and friends to vote on the right thing. So
I don't pretend to understand the Supreme Court. I'm often mystified by it, but I think there is a lot to be said for the simple idea of momentum. I think the liberatory movements, they don't spread geographically, they resonate, you know, like sounds. And I think people are just tuned to the same frequency across the world now, or in many parts of the world anyway. And so I don't know, the Supreme Court often surprises people in their votes, but I do think there's a real potential for people to associate.
Michael, we've lost your audio. We're going to try to bring you right back on the line. Can you just say a few words? Okay, we're gonna call you right back. My guest, Michael Lee Murphy, is an Irish-born, New England-raised, Montreal-schooled reporter. He's also a contributing editor with Ricochet. And are you back with us, Michael?
I think so.
Yeah. Okay. Yes. Continue your sentence.
Basically, I was saying there is a real potential for people to associate the liberatory act of legalizing equal marriage with the other liberatory struggles that are going on. It's definitely something that happened in Ireland, and I think it's beginning. People are beginning to recognize that in the United States as well.
Interestingly, in Australia, where there is a debate around same-sex marriage, there is vitriol spewing from the Australian leadership against the Irish for the same-sex marriage. I mean, really, very sad state of some of the statements of one Australian commentator slamming the Irish as a people who can't grow potatoes over during a debate on same-sex marriage. So it'll be interesting to see how that influences the Australians who are tackling the same issue.
There's, I mean, that is, really an unfortunate comment. There's a large class of economic migrants in Australia. And so there's, that quote from him is tinged with not only your sort of regular Irish racism against the Irish, which are characterizing them as leprechauns and so on, but there's quite a nasty economic and social racism behind that as well. I think there was a poll.
Unfortunately, Michael, we are out of time, so I'm going to have to say goodbye to you. But
it's polling very well in Australia, same-sex marriage.
So we'll certainly continue to watch that story. I want to thank you so much for joining us today.
It was my pleasure. Thanks for having me on.
My guest, Michael Lee Murphy, is a contributing editor with Ricochet, and we've been talking about the Irish vote for same-sex marriage and the model that it presents for democracy, but also the influence that it might have socially around the world. This is Uprising. We'll be right back.